Live from our nation's capital.
How do we reopen this economy?
The latest on how this pandemic is impacting farmers.
What does this do for the United States' relationship with China?
Bloomberg Sound On. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
We're responding to this crisis, and manufacturers are stepping up like never before.
We're looking at 70 candidates for different vaccines.
How do we make sure a pandemic of this scale never happens again?
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
TikTok. Microsoft looks to move in on TikTok. Plus, the latest on Capitol Hill. Lots to get through. Congressman John Garamendi is going to kick things off. Democrat from California. Folks, they're still at an impasse. They're still at an impasse on Capitol Hill. No new developments to report as it relates to whether or not there will be a potential breakthrough. But maybe someone who can help break this down is Congressman John Garamendi. Congressman Garamendi is, of course, a Democrat from California. And Congressman, where are we in terms of reaching a deal on economic stimulus?
A deal will be done. Exactly what it is very, very much up in the air, but it'll be done. And it'll be, I think there'll be the major elements of the House bill will take place. The amount of money, well, that's negotiable and that's moving around. We came in with $1 trillion for state and local governments, which are really hurting because of the shutdown, sales tax, and other tax revenues just cratering, as well as the $600 piece supplement for the uninsured employment program. But we'll see what happens here. I suspect that there'll be a number, and it'll get done probably towards the end of this week. Right now, time is marching on, and people are without the benefits. There's also this very, very big problem of renters being forced out of their homes for the moratorium on rent payments or rent being paid is now over. And so we're going to see what happens here.
So, okay, so the what I'm hearing from my sources, Congressman, is the debate really is, I mean, yes, you're worlds apart with Republicans on where the money should be allocated. But in terms of where this process goes, Republicans are saying they are willing to have a short-term extension. Speaker Pelosi hit the Sunday shows, as you know, and said absolutely not, that most of her caucus wants to see a long-term deal. But, I mean, with so many Americans feeling so much pain, as you noted, you know, rent, evictions and unemployment benefits, not to mention the economic anxiety for those Americans who have been able to hold on to a job but are facing the potential of furloughs or worse layoffs at the end of the year. Can you get to some type of short-term deal or some type of an agreement in the next couple of days, or is that now just a wash?
The offer that was put on the table for short term was 1 week. I mean, that's ridiculous. That is just really ridiculous, because how are you going to gear up, begin the process once again, and then stop 7 days later? Not going to make any sense whatsoever. And in addition to that, we'd be right back at it a week or two, whatever the period is. We need to settle this out. This pandemic isn't going away anytime soon. We're going to be faced with this throughout the fall. Probably into the early year of 2021. And so let's set it up. Let's make sure that people know that they can count on the unemployment insurance, whatever the number is, 600, 500, 475, whatever the number is. Let people know that they can count on the food banks being open, that the SNAP, the food stamp programs, all of those programs, and for the local governments. The reason this is called the Heroes Bill is that governments across the nation, state, local, districts, and hospitals are in a very desperate financial situation. The bottom has fallen out of their revenue. The tax revenues have cratered, and they're going to be laying off. They'll start laying off essential people, people that are necessary for public health, people that are necessary for police, fire protection, a lot of the things that we know we need, but we don't think about because they're always there. You know, the sanitation system will work, really? When half the sanitation workers get laid off? Maybe not. Garbage will get picked up? Maybe, maybe not. So anyway, that's what we need to deal with, recognizing this is not a short-term problem. This is in all probability of 5 to 6 months, we hope.
So let me ask you something that I've been asking many Democrats like yourself, which is, and in the last version of the stimulus, you voted for this, and we've got 2 minutes left, but do you think it's important to provide some economic tax relief for small and medium-sized businesses if they agree to not lay anyone off or furlough anyone by the end of the year?
Well, we did something very similar with the PPP program, which basically says that if you don't lay these people off and you continue to employ them, you can have the money and it is forgiven. In one sense, it's much better than a tax issue because it actually is cash that was readily available now. You don't have to wait a year until there's a tax refund comes in. So I think what we were doing with the PPP program is very good. Unfortunately, the administration of it by the Trump administration was very bad. A good portion of that money wound up where it wasn't needed. And the largest portion went to the very large corporations. So small businesses absolutely need help. There's no doubt about it. But I personally prefer the PPP program oriented towards small business, keeping the people employed as much as possible, recognizing that many of them simply are not going to be able to operate.
Yeah. All right. Congressman John Garamendi, Democrat from New York, I'm so appreciative of your time. I know you've been working around the clock on this, so thank you so much for calling in to give us an update. And coming up, we've got the 2020 fallout and more economic fallout on Microsoft and TikTok. My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio, and you're listening to Bloomberg 99.1. My name is Kevin Cirilli. I am the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. And we're going to go behind the scenes because Roger Fisk is on. He's a Democratic insider, Obama world insider, you know, knows everyone in Obama world. When am I going to know who the vice presidential pick is for presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden?
I would imagine just about a week from now. I think it'll come out early in the week so that you can frame a whole bunch of amplification around it. And build kind of a narrative around it. But I would imagine the beginning of next week.
Okay, and who do you think it's going to be?
Well, if it's a policy pick, I think it goes in the Warren direction. If it's a geographic pick, I think it goes in the Demings direction. And if it's a kind of narrative pick in terms of like someone who can help tell a broader story about America, then I think it goes in the Harris direction. So it really comes down to where does Team Biden think they need a little extra muscle, a little expanded capacity to tell a particular story? But those are the three that I would really be looking at right now.
All right. I'm going to bring into this conversation Sarah Lenti. She's a Republican strategist and the executive director at the Lincoln Project. Sarah, like I said, we've been having technical difficulties, but my good friend Nancy Lyon in the break was trying to get the board up and running. They're rebooting the system in New York. But I'm focused. I'm present. And I'm grateful to have you on this program. I know you're at the Lincoln Project, which, of course, has been quite critical of the president's reelection efforts. So what will you be looking for in a Biden vice presidential pick that would be able to attract not progressives, but maybe Republicans like yourself who are disenfranchised from President Trump's coalition?
You know, I look at Tammy Duckworth, Senator Duckworth, and I think you look at her record of service from the military to the Senate. Her husband is a combat veteran as well. I think her narrative is a very interesting one and one that could be potentially very helpful with respect to bringing on moderates and soft Republicans.
So if it is a progressive, if it is a Senator Harris, for example, Sarah, what would that do for your work at the Lincoln Project in the sense? Does it matter? Are you all in for Biden at this point, even if
right.
It is a progressive pick? And I say that respectfully.
No, and I hear you loud and clear. We at the Lincoln Project have endorsed former Vice President Biden for president, and our endorsement will stand no matter whom he chooses for his VP. We also, you know, going back in presidential history, maybe Sarah Palin, but But for her, VP choices don't make or break an election. And this is about Donald Trump. And I do understand that Vice President Biden is older, but this still comes down to Biden and his record of service. So we're going to stay focused on him. We're going to endorse him. The endorsement will remain regardless.
It's going to be really interesting. And again, we will talk about all of the upcoming implications of 2020. But let's just now pivot back to the markets and pivot back to economic stimulus talks with our guest still on hold, Roger Fiss, Democratic strategist, longtime President Obama aide and principal of New Day Strategy, as well as Sarah Lentie, Republican strategist and executive director at the Lincoln Project. I'm tapped into my Bloomberg terminal now, and Claire Ballantyne's reporting on the markets. NASDAQ sets a record as tech jumps, the dollar climbs. Stocks advance with tech shares leading the way amid positive economic data and after the White House was said to consider acting on its own to boost unemployment benefits. Get this, the NASDAQ 100 reached a record as traders sought out companies poised to do best in a stay-at-home economy. Apple Inc. set an all-time high, and Microsoft Corp. gained as it tried to salvage a deal for the U.S. operations of TikTok. Coming up, we're going to talk U.S. and China. But I find this interesting, Roger, because the White House, there were some reports that they actually might get involved on the unemployment benefits and act around Congress. Saleha Mosin, Eric Watson, and Justin Sink reporting that President Trump said earlier today he may take executive action to impose a moratorium on evictions, with talks on a new virus relief plan making slow progress in Congress. Do you think this was the president's plan all along to say, hey, Congress is being so incredibly inept, both sides of the aisle, that I'm going to have to use executive orders while they hammer out a fiscally responsible deal?
No, and first off, it's great to be on with Sarah, meeting the executive, or being on a program with the executive director of the Lincoln Project is like meeting a Beatle or something like that for me.
Thank you.
But I doubt that it has been his plan all along, because I've said, you know, many times, I can simplify things for good or bad, but, you know, good policy makes good politics. Like, it's not that complicated. So if he had taken this posture all along in A, been straight and transparent with the American people, be laid out a, you know, relatively comprehensive but still somewhat simplified vision of what a national strategy would be, everything from community health centers on to protecting, you know, nursing homes and everything else, it wouldn't be that difficult for something like this to fit into a broader continuum where people would say, yeah, this fits the pattern of what he's been doing. He's been stepping up and doing the right thing. But unfortunately, I think given that he goes in so many different directions many, many times a day, that this is just basically a piece of shrapnel, right, that just goes flying off in a random direction. And it doesn't necessarily reflect on or it work as a product of some kind of design and structure. It's more just vacillating and flailing around and trying to accommodate that day's news cycle.
You know, I hear you on that point. And just to bring everybody up to speed, the president's telling reporters earlier today, I'm going to read it, quote, "They are not interested in unemployment. They are not interested in evictions, which is a big deal. People are going to be evicted, but I'm going to stop it because I'll do it myself if I have to." Sarah, we've got a minute left before I've got to jump to the break. But I want to get your reaction to that, to the developments of the president saying he might bypass Congress to use executive orders in order to get some of the evictions and unemployment benefits handled in the short term.
We don't trust anything the president says. So I think that just remains to be seen. Let's see what he does. But he makes a lot of promises and he's a lot of words. So we'll just see.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. The panel stays, Roger Fiss, and I guess Roger's version of the Beatles. Sarah, hey, Roger, what's your favorite Beatles song?
In my life, because the piano solo is the kind of intersection of growing up doing classical music and then transitioning into rock and roll. So when I heard that when I was about 13, I was like, that's the intersection of the classical music I grew up with and then the rock direction that I went in as a musician.
Okay, you would think that where I was taking this conversation was, let's see if Sarah can play that song when we come back from the jump. But what I'm actually going to say is Charlie Vollmer, in what has been a very crazy technological day, let's say if we can play the Beatles when we come back from one of the breaks in the next hour. He's running the boards for us in New York. Much more coming up next with the Beatles and Roger Fisk. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
Are stepping up like never before.
We're looking at 70 candidates for different vaccines.
How do we make sure a pandemic of this scale never happens again?
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Breaking news tonight as we await President Donald Trump's news conference. This as he makes fresh reaction to White House reporters. Headlines on the Bloomberg Terminal, he might bypass Congress altogether and use executive orders on evictions, on unemployment benefits, plus NASDAQ closing at a record. NASDAQ rather setting a record as tech jumps. This is Microsoft is caught up in the U.S.-China negotiations. We're going to handle all of that. 2020 Watch, I will bring you President Trump's remarks as they happen. We've got a panel of insiders, Roger Fisk, Democratic strategist, principal at New Day Strategy, and executive director of the Lincoln Project. They've been everywhere. Can't stop seeing their ads in your social feed. She's a Republican strategist. She's the executive director at the Lincoln Project, Sarah Lentzi. So lots to get through. Lots to get through.
We're following multiple fronts tonight. This is we just got word from the White House that President Trump's press conference is now set to begin in the 5:30 p.m. Eastern half hour. I will bring you those remarks, which we are all carefully following as everybody wants to know whether or not they will break this impasse that lawmakers have up on Capitol Hill. So we're following two fronts. We've got the economic front and the political front. And let's start with the economy and the policy, because earlier this afternoon, President Trump was at the White House and he said that he might utilize executive action in order to address evictions and unemployment benefits. This after the top economic diplomats in his administration flooded the Sunday shows over the weekend, including Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, as well as his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, mind you, former Freedom Caucus member, Mark Meadows, and saying that they were prepared to have long-term political battles on the budget negotiations. Speaker Pelosi, meanwhile, she made some comments after a nearly two-hour meeting that they had made some progress with Secretary Mnuchin and Meadows, as well as Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. It was productive, she said earlier this afternoon. We are moving down the track. We still have our differences, but that's a little better tone. Look, I got to read the tone. That's where we're at. That's where we're at. We're reading into people's tones as they're impassed. And Speaker Pelosi saying that it was a productive meeting. Could be worse. I'm an optimist, right? We all got to be optimistic. We all got to remain, have our gratitude. She says that they're productive. And they're going to meet again. They're going to meet again sometime tomorrow. So the reason I bring this up is because meanwhile, stocks advanced with tech shares leading the way amid positive economic data and after the White House was said to consider acting on its own to boost unemployment benefits. Claire Ballantyne on the Bloomberg Terminal. NASDAQ 100 reached a record as traders sought out companies poised to do best in stay-at-home economy. And of course, Microsoft wrapped up in this because of the TikTok deal. I never thought TikTok, by the way, side note, the youth sap would be such a driving force of the conversation come Monday morning. We'll talk U.S.-China coming up. But let's bring in the latest on this budget deal and negotiation with Roger Fisk, Democratic strategist, longtime President Obama aide and principal at New Day Strategy, Sarah Lentzi, Republican strategist and executive director at the Lincoln Project. That's the group that's been really, you know, behind the Republicans who really are frustrated with the president. And they, of course, are looking for another option, and they back Joe Biden. Roger, for Speaker Pelosi, take us behind the scenes. For Speaker Pelosi, she's got to be careful from a political perspective to negotiate with Republicans while also appeasing her base. How does she do it?
Well, you're correct in that there's very few things that the Speaker shares with the Senate Majority Leader, but neither of them ever bring anything out for a vote unless they know exactly how it's going to go. I mean, I think she can play it pretty straight with her caucus and pretty straight with the folks in the White House. I don't think she's asking for anything really outrageous. I mean, the guest that you had on at the beginning of your show was talking about if we don't do aid to cities and towns, you get into infrastructural issues like sanitation and, you know, all those things that kind of like where we have this storm coming up the coast right now. So combined sewer overflow, I remember from working with mayors, is a gigantic issue because if the sewers aren't functioning, very little else does. So I don't think that she has to go and do anything all too outrageous or even getting into anything that could be thrown in the kind of the cultural bucket issue-wise or anything. She just needs to do nuts and bolts kind of kitchen table stuff about how do people live lives with dignity and enough to eat and a roof over their head for the next 12 weeks while we try to fix some of these bigger problems.
But see, I go back to middle-class Americans and small and medium-sized companies who are the psychology of the American worker right now, and it's something I've brought up, I think, every show, is so incredibly real. You talk to refinery workers. You talk to construction workers who are showing up on job sites. And people, this is, you know, and I get the debate and the study that came out of, I think it was the University of Chicago in terms of unemployment benefits and whatnot. But this is America. I still believe that most Americans want to show up to work. They want to work. But the psychology of whether or not they feel safe to do so or to send their kids into a classroom, that's so real. That's a real concern. I mean, this isn't, you know, making it up and Republicans and Democrats. It doesn't really matter if you have an underlying condition or not. Sarah Lenti, I don't want to talk 2020 for a second. I want to tap into your experience as the policy director on the Bush-Cheney 2000 campaign. And, of course, as you worked in the Bush administration at the National Security Council for now former National Security Advisor or Condoleezza Rice, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has a job to do. So if you're Leader McConnell, if you're in the leadership's office, if you're in Senator Romney's office, I know you've got ties to Romney as well, how do you find the transpartisan angle right now in an incredibly polarized time to deliver some economic relief to Americans who desperately need it?
Well, just what you said, it is a global pandemic. It's a global pandemic, and we're looking at, from what I understand, the CDC is projecting 1,000 U.S. deaths every day for the next 30 days. This is going to have huge economic repercussions. I mean, we're already seeing the millions and millions of people out of work. This is not a time to play politics. There are lives on the line here. There are livelihoods on the line. If you can't find a transpartisan message in that, I don't know how... Well, to say, you know, this is his job. He needs to do this.
So
Romney would agree with that, you know. But
I'd love to interview Senator Mitt Romney. Yeah. Dare I say, hey, his office. I would love to talk to them about China. Go ahead, Roger.
Well, that's the interesting thing is the two names that aren't part of these discussions, right, are McConnell and Pence. And the vice president and the Senate majority leader have repeatedly been undermined and undercut. Sometimes, at least in Vice President Pence's case, while he's on Capitol Hill having discussions, similar to like when Tillerson would land in South Korea and he would, you know, boot up his phone and see that he had already been undercut by the president. Those two folks, I think, are keeping all of this at arm's length. It would be very natural, obviously, for McConnell to be playing a leadership role. But, you know, the White House, and specifically the president, just goes in so many different directions minute to minute that none of them are going to step up and put their shoulder behind anything until the White House gets backed into some kind of corner and Mnuchin and Meadows have made enough of an agreement so that the broader contours of something come together. Uh-huh. Because then at least McConnell knows if he starts whipping his caucus and Pence goes up and starts having meetings.
Hey, Roger, do you hear the music? Do you hear the music?
Yeah.
This is for you, Roger. We got to go to the jump and then Sarah, but we can keep talking after. This is the Beatles. This is Roger's favorite Beatles song, everybody, in my life. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg TV and Radio. Thank you to my friend Charlie Vollmer for getting that song for me. It's a good one. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. We're awaiting President Trump. He's set to set to speak in the at 5:30 for the press conference. I'll bring you that. But I want to talk foreign policy. You know, that's really all I care about, to be candid with you. It's my top favorite thing these days. I shouldn't say that's all. That's not true. That's a lie. That's a lie. But I want to talk foreign policy, and I want to talk TikTok, because I was talking about it with some of my favorites at Bloomberg Television and Radio, the Bloomberg surveillance team, earlier this morning. And I think it really does bear repeating, and you're seeing it in the market reaction with Microsoft, because Microsoft gained as it tried to salvage a deal for the U.S. operations of TikTok. And if you go into the Bloomberg terminal, Shelley Banjo and Dina Bass are reporting, in a bid to salvage a deal for the U.S. operations of TikTok, Microsoft chief executive, the Microsoft CEO, Satya Nadella, spoke with President Donald Trump by phone about how to secure the administration's blessing to buy the wildly popular but besieged music video app. Now, you and I, folks, we can talk about whether or not it really is a music video app, because when I go to the airport pre-COVID and I see these tweens and youths do these dances and their selfies and their – I don't even know. I think they're doing the Macarena, but then I don't even know. I mean, I must be getting old, folks, because I truly don't understand what TikTok is, what it does, what it doesn't do. But either way, the national security implications of it are incredibly important, that China's ByteDance is lumped into this. They pushed this app. It surged to the top of the app charts, and so many millions of Americans and kids, under 18ers, downloaded it. And it sets this precedent. If China is able to inject into the popular culture an app that surges to the top of the charts, what else can they do with apps? What other data are they utilizing? My colleague, my friend Ben Brody, a Bloomberg technology reporter, told us last week about some of the national security concerns of the data storage that is happening on these types of apps, and maybe not necessarily on TikTok, but that China could potentially utilize. You know, I said that based upon the reporting that I know and the sources that I talk with, that really this is one of those rare areas where there is common ground with Republicans and Democrats up on Capitol Hill, most of them anyway, on the Intel committees and whatnot. And that's where I want to take this conversation with Roger Fisk, Democratic strategist, longtime President Obama aide and principal of New Day Strategy, and Sarah Lenti, who's a Republican strategist. She's the executive director at the Lincoln Project, and she previously has worked for former National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, and she was also served as the advisor to former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney and the lead researcher on his book, No Apology, The Case for the American Greatness. Hey, Sarah, I actually loved Romney's Netflix documentary, but I want to talk to you about TikTok. Which is this the type of policy tool that any occupant of the White House could start to utilize in terms of a public-private partnership domestically to make sure that any China-backed businesses don't necessarily just have free entryway into Americans' phones?
Well, he has the ability to do this under CFIUS, but I think the timing is really interesting. And look, I'm not a tech wizard, and this is not my policy area of focus, and I'm working on 2020. But I mean, I think it's very interesting timing, and I think, you know, we all know what happened in 2016 with Facebook, and I think this is me, just if I'm putting on my political hat, this is a way to show that he is has oversight and is looking out for Americans, and he's concerned about, you know, China getting their data. I mean, I just think the timing is very interesting here.
And it is, because last week when I had Tony Blinken on, he's the former deputy secretary of state in the Obama administration, Roger Fisk. I mean, he was saying essentially the policy argument for Biden, to contrast with Trump, is that by restoring some of the Western alliance, by restoring international coalitions, it will make it easier for the United States to deal with Beijing. However, Trump is saying the unpredictability, he would argue, is that the alliances haven't worked in the long term and whatnot. But Roger Fisk, I mean, when you talk to Democrats and whatnot, are they – this is a nonpartisan area, not necessarily on TikTok, for example, but this broader issue of China penetrating Silicon Valley is really a bipartisan issue.
Yeah, I agree. And I think when you say a broader issue, that's the key, right? Like, TikTok is just the
the shiny object right now that people tend to fixate on. And by the way, your conversation with Congressman Kingston about TikTok is one for the ages. that was hilarious. But any of the concerns that you've just walked through in the last 3 or 4 minutes are equally applicable to a whole number of other ways that we live our online lives. I mean, if people are concerned about, you know, some large entity somewhere hoovering up their data and connecting the dots and looking at the patterns and habits and trends of how we consume information, make consumer choices, where we spend our money, how much time we spend on sites, et cetera, that those concerns do not go away with whatever the fate of TikTok is. And then I also think that that's the reason why the president is grabbing at it, right? The interesting thing is that this is the reverse of what China does to us. If you're an American company, you have to have some kind of Chinese company as part of your footprint if you want to do business in China. So in a sense, it's not without context that he would say something like this. But back to my earlier point, because I of course agree with it, and Sarah's earlier point. You know, whether or not the president's going to be consistent and actually follow through on this tomorrow and next week and next month is really the issue, because if history is any guide, he tends to just kind of fly around in a bunch of different directions without a lot of follow-up, without some broader strategic framework.
And Sarah, we got a minute left, but I mean, if from a political point of position, rather, put it back on your political cap, for Joe Biden, I mean, he's got to reach the same type of Republicans like yourself and say that he would restore alliances, right? I mean, that's the whole argument that Biden's going to make.
He will. And, you know, Biden has a record with world leaders from NATO to, you know, Asia, and he will do that. He has those relationships and he will restore those alliances, and he'll campaign on that. I think we'll hear a lot about NATO in the upcoming debate. I also think when you're just talking about Biden and just like the foreign policy, we're in a pandemic and we're struggling with kids going back to school and people losing their jobs. And look back on Biden's record, he lost his wife, he was a single dad for 5 years, he rode the train every day to the Senate. Like, his ability to and insert empathy into this campaign is something that I just am waiting to see and look forward and I'm hungry to eat up.
More next. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
My name is Kevin Cirilli. And just to put an end point on that conversation on TikTok and Microsoft and ByteDance, Microsoft says it's going to finish their talks with ByteDance no later then September 15th. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg TV and for Bloomberg Radio. All right, let's talk. We're awaiting President Trump, who's set to have a news conference on the economic deal or lack thereof. They're at an impasse. They're still at an impasse. But he's going to talk at the White House this half hour. I will bring you those remarks. Eric Wasson's on standby for us, Bloomberg congressional reporter, one of the hardest working congressional reporters that I know. Genius. He's truly like a wonky, wizardy genius. I don't even know if those are words. But he's going to be on standby for us to navigate through that. And I want to bring in our panel of hopefully she will become a regular. Sarah Lentzi, Republican strategist and executive director at the Lincoln Project. Roger Fisk is a Democratic strategist, longtime President Obama aide and principal of New Day Strategy.
I'm like, you're just not getting rid of me.
No, Roger, I appreciate you. I also appreciate the FaceTime calls that I get from Roger, like, periodically throughout this pandemic. He's like, how you doing, buddy? Everyone knows. He's got his instruments and, yeah, Roger, what have you been doing to kill time? What are you reading, Roger Fisk?
So I'm just towards the end of, I forget whose show I saw him on, but his name is Jim Wallace. It's called Christ in Crisis, and it's about the need for believers to try to kind of depoliticize religion without removing themselves from the town square is probably the easiest way to describe it. And it's very, very interesting. The intersection of religion and politics to me is kind of like almost a hobby, if you will.
I've read a lot about kind of the founding fathers.
I know, yeah. And this is something I don't really... Yeah, that text me the name of that book because that's really interesting. We just got the 2-minute warning for President Trump, so if I cut you off, it's because of that. But this is something I never talk about. But as you know, I have a very deep faith, and it's not political at all. It's more of a compass for me. I want to talk about the virus, though, because there were some new developments as we await for President Trump from Dr. Fauci, which is that children's ages 10 to 19 can spread COVID. Can spread COVID-19 as easily as adults. And they're actually talking more and more about wearing eye covers and face shields.